You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode number 27 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Havoc Faction. Havoc Faction is a brand new concept band from Los Angeles, California, with post-hardcore and melodic hard rock influences. They have a vigilante post-apocalyptic theme and are currently working on a comic book story to coincide with their music. They have been compared to bands such as Starset, Chevelle, Thrice, and Fightstar. For more information on the band, check them out on Instagram at Havoc_Faction and Facebook/Havoc Faction. Now here it is, their new single from their debut EP, Welcome to the Fight, My Human Condition.
Tell myself Hey, this is Eddie from the band Thrice, and you're listening to That One Time on Tour.
Run for the gold, cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. To get back in the bank tomorrow, we'll do it. We'll do it all again.
Hello and welcome to episode number 27 of That One Time on Tour. As always, I'm your host, Chris Swinney, back with another stellar conversation with someone in or around the music industry. Last week was a lot of fun hanging out with Jack O'Shea from Bayside. This week is no different. One of the most requested bands from my listeners, Thrice. I have Mr. Eddie Breckenridge, bassist for Thrice, on the program today. We talk about all kinds of stuff, and it was so much fun catching up with Eddie. I hadn't seen him or any of the guys from Thrice in a really long time. So before we get into my conversation, we have a new sponsor, Merge 4. Merge 4 is this amazing company. They make socks. Now, I know that doesn't sound that cool, but their socks are really, really cool. Wee Man, a past guest on the show, has his own like signature sock. Steve Caballero, you know, pro skater, all kinds of cool stuff. They have Sublime socks. They have Circle Jerk socks. So you need to check out merge4.com. That is M-E-R-G-E, the number 4.com. They're amazing. We're going to be giving away some product on the show very, very soon. So check them out and show them some love and tell them that Chris at TOTOT sent you over there. Also, Sticker Wolf is back. Sticker Wolf just sent some amazing stickers that they created for us. The logo that they made for us is awesome. It's got the little mic. It's really, really cool. And if you guys want some stickers or some graphic design work, head over to stickerwolf.com. You can also check them out on Instagram, Facebook. It's just at stickerwolf. Rockabilia.com has signed on to be a sponsor for more episodes, and I could not be more excited. It is October, you know, Halloween is coming up, and there's no better place to get hooked up for Halloween than Rockabilia.com. They have every different configuration of Eddie from Iron Maiden, the masks that you can get, so you can be Eddie from Power Slave, or, you know, Eddie as the Trooper, whatever you want. Rockabilia has it. They also have any number of spooky band shirts. They have Misfits. They have AFI. Any kind of gothy October type band, you have to go to Rockabilia and check it out. So go to Rockabilia and at checkout, put in the promo code PCTOTOT, and you're going to save 15% on your entire order. Okay, make sure that you are following us on all of the social media platforms. It's at TOTOT Podcast. If you want to get in touch, you can hit me up, TOTOT Podcast at gmail.com. You can call the hotline. That is 1-765-372-8818. That's it. Please review, subscribe, rate in iTunes or on Stitcher or Google Podcasts or wherever you listen. It really helps when you guys do that. It brings awareness to the show, and the show grows and more people find out about it. So I'm going to stop rambling. I'm going to get right into my conversation. This was a great episode for me. I've been a huge Thrice fan for a very long time. Eddie was the best guy ever, and I'm so glad he was on the show. And maybe in the future we'll get Dustin or Tepe or somebody on the show as well. But this is it, man. Eddie Breckenridge, bass player from Thrice, episode number 27 of That One Time on Tour. Here we go. And I've got Eddie from Thrice on the line. How you doing out there, Eddie?
Hello. I'm good.
That's cool. You guys are on tour currently promoting the new album Palms. You're in Charleston tonight, right?
Yeah, we're in Charleston. I'm here on a park bench, a ways away from the venue, so I can find some quiet.
That's awesome. How's the weather out there in Charleston? I know normally it's pretty hot, but it's probably nice right now.
Yeah, it's actually earlier this morning, it was pretty brutal and hot, but it just cooled down. I think some clouds came in, and it's really nice right now. So
how has the tour been going for the new records? Going okay?
It's been awesome. We're on tour with the Bronx and Teenage Wrist. Both we've been friends with Bronx guys for a long time now, but Teenage Wrist are label mates. I mean, I guess it's all Epitaph bands on this tour, which is cool. It's been great.
That's cool. So I tell you what, man, we're going to talk a lot about the new record, but I do on this podcast, I like to go back in time. So what I'd like to actually, let me start off with how I was introduced to the band. I've been a fan of the band since before you guys signed to Hopeless, which I know is kind of crazy.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's Green Flag Records version of the band.
Yeah. I found you guys actually on Napster back in 1999.
Damn.
And I mean, something set with me. I knew that you guys were just, I love the way that all the music was put together, like the punk side, the metal side, everything. And then, you know, I was even on the old message board on the Thrice website.
Like the guest book.
Yeah. Like the guest book where people were mad because you guys were getting played on K-Rock and like things were starting to happen and people were kind of pissed off.
Yeah. Well, that was when people,
How did you guys feel about that back in the day? Like when that started and you guys started to kind of gain some notoriety, like did the old fans kind of abandon you? I mean, it just felt weird back then. Cause I remember being a part of that guest book and a lot of people, especially from like Orange County, that thought you were their band, like their little secret, they were getting kind of mad.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that happens pretty continually for us. Like, from every record, it kind of moves on. People are like, oh, you should be more like this. Or why are you doing, I don't know, whatever you're doing. It happens in cycles. But at that time, I think people were pretty protective of like us being their special band. And I understand, especially at that time, it was like when music was harder to find, you know?
Yeah.
So if you find this thing and you really identify with it, and then somebody that isn't really like you starts liking the band, or you find out that other people are learning about the band that haven't maybe made as much of an effort into it. I can understand how that's frustrating, but, I don't know. I mean, it was a bummer that people acted that way, but I think it was a minority of the people that liked us, and I think there were a lot of people that were stoked.
I mean, I know that I, for one, was stoked because, you know, living in the middle of the country, which is where the Ataris are from, we're from Indiana.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, if they keep getting bigger, maybe I'll get to see them.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an awesome trip for us. I mean, we just kind of, there weren't any really like long-term goals for the band ever. It was like, let's do this and see what happens. And then you kind of just move from thing to thing. And we're still doing that. So,
so I want to go back even further than that though, just to kind of get a feel for you. What made you want to pursue music? Like, when did you get started and what was kind of your first musical memory that kind of it made you passionate about what you were doing?
I mean, I always was like a big fan of music. Not in like a nerdy sense. I just got pumped by, you know, certain groups. When I was really young, it was like Eye of the Tiger, or like then later on I was like
Survivor, man.
I liked the Beastie Boys and even like some R&B stuff.
That's cool.
But I definitely remember my brother had his like first job. He was also in the band. He plays drums. He had his first job. This is long before the band started. And one of his coworkers had a guitar and let my brother borrow it. And at the time we were like only listening to rap or like R&B stuff, like Bobby Brown and Bell Biv DeVoe and whatever was cool.
Another bad creation.
Yes. Oh yes. Yes. Another bad creation for sure. He brought my brother basically brought home a guitar and a Van Halen cassette.
Wow.
And we were like, what the heck is this? But there was something in it that just got like adrenaline pumping and was like, oh, I want to figure out how you do that.
Were you guys into Metallica at all?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think when I first got into Metallica, it was like just after And Justice for All came out, but I ended up getting the Master of the Puppets album because the cover looked awesome.
That's the same with me, because I think you're only a year younger than me. So I just remember I got into Justice, and then I was like, wow, they've got a bunch of other records. So I went back all the other ones too.
Well, funny enough, I ended up getting really attracted to all the like classical influence.
Oh, me too. Yeah. The neoclassical stuff. Cause that was so great. That and Iron Maiden and any band that did that, I was just hooked, man.
Yeah. And I think that ended up being like a big influence on our band, like Bryce later. It's like, whoa, you can mix like an acoustic guitar and then drop into this like heavy thing and like kind of juxtapose those two like opposing, like the pretty feel with the darker, like heavier feel. And I feel like doing that just like complements both things. So like, I think we've always been excited about like what you can mix and what complements what and how you can experiment with music.
Well, that's what I kind of wanted to talk about a little bit. I mean, we're going to skip ahead a little bit. I know you guys, you know, after the Green Records thing, you guys signed to Hopeless Subsidy.
Yeah. Subsidy, yeah.
And I mean, Identity Crisis was great. I know you probably cringe because I've listened to a couple interviews. I know it's Thrice is your first band that you're in. So I would hate to like live and die by my first band's record.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you look back at the time and what you guys did with that record, it was amazing. And then you guys put out, Identity Crisis, or that was the first one.
Identity Crisis, then Illusion of Safety.
Yeah, Illusion of Safety. Now, when you guys signed to Island, I just remember back then in like around 2003, 2004, it seemed like the major labels, it was almost like the second coming of Nirvana. They signed you guys and they signed Thursday and they signed all these bands. Yeah. What was that like for you guys? I was on Warped Tour in 2003, I think, when you guys were, and I just remember talking to Riley, and I guess you guys were getting like flown into New York City for dinners, and like, is that all true?
We didn't. When we started talking to Island, that's when we made a trip to New York City and had dinners and whatnot. But before that, it was just like people were meeting us on tour, which was so stressful. Like, I think we were on tour with Anti-Flag. Yeah, we did. We were on a tour with Anti-Flag, and just the vibe that it was creating was like really counter to like how we wanted to pursue like doing a show. You don't want to like, you know, everybody arrives at the venue, you're like trying to get ready and do stuff, and then you got to go meet with some label rep or something about, you know, trying to discuss the future of your band or what you want or what they can do for you or whatever. It kind of like wrecked the vibe of the tour in a way, but it was also, we had the mindset that was like, we definitely, like anything, we definitely shouldn't like shut anything down that could be an option that's good for us. And also, we don't have to do this. So go in with the mindset, like, we don't have to sign to a major label unless it's like a no brainer. But it's like, we're happy where we are now. Things are growing. We're doing exactly what we want to do. So,
I've dealt with a lot of major label guys and they can be kind of, you know, just not my kind of people.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're selling the label to you a lot of times up front. So like, some of those people don't really understand what you want, but they do have like sales pitches that they do for everybody. And a lot of times that was not what we were looking for. We were just like, how can we create the thing that we want to create better? Yeah.
So what did Island have that the other ones didn't? Did you guys just get along with them? Did they see like the vision for the band?
Yeah. Well, the problem is, later on, the people that worked at the label totally shifted to another label. That ended up being a huge reason why we ended up not continuing to work with them. But yeah, before that, it was like a lot of people that ended up starting Def Jam Records. Because Island is Island Def Jam.
Yeah.
And they were like, the way that they pitched it to us, it was like, yeah, like we understand that you guys aren't like going to be writing singles first, but I think we can find singles in the music that you're making. So you guys just do what you want to do, and we'll help you do that. And let's like grow this band, and we'll give you the means to maybe record some things in ways that you can't with, you know, the funding that you have right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that sounds cool. And then we met with like, you know, the A&R guy that we had and the people that we met there. They understood that we weren't like, you know, like some of the other bands are wanting to pursue, like, we didn't want to be stars. So like, they're like, oh yeah, we won't like plaster your faces all over everything. Let's just like make things moody. Let's do a really cool packaging that nobody's done before. Like, we can do that. I feel like the packaging, the limited packaging of that, Artist in the Ambulance CD is like one of the coolest things we've been able to do.
And it was like that digipack, right? Like the cardboard kind of digi. It was great.
Yeah. Man. With like the you had different cards for each song. Yeah. And I mean, it was cool being able to like work with them on that. And they really had like, the aesthetic that we were looking for, and like how we can continue to experiment and create in every facet of what we're doing. So it was kind of, that was the no brainer for us. We're like, okay, we got to do this.
Did it ever bother you that there was kind of like this association with Thursday? I always, cause you guys didn't really sound like them. Like, I'm friends with those guys. I'm sure you are as well. You guys tour together. But I thought it was always just like, you guys both signed to Island and your names start with a TH.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the sentiment in the, as far as like what was going on with labels at the time is like, oh, there's this like style of music that people are really connecting with, and we need to make money off of it.
We need to exploit it.
Yeah. And I mean, that happens in cycles too. I mean, dubstep or whatever, you know, you see stuff like that, or I don't know, even like grunge or whatever, you know, people are trying to pick up on how to make some money off of people doing a thing that is kind of all in the same vein.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like we were very different from the Thursday guys.
Yeah, totally.
But also I don't think it was bad marketing us together or trying to like push us together. I know the label was like really happy that they had like representatives of this new kind of thing that was going on from both sides of both coasts, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't really care. I didn't like the Screamo title.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a little bit like lame. Like, it just sounds lame. I don't know. But
I just feel like all music, if it's good, is supposed to be emotional, which is, you know, where the emo title comes from. And then if you scream once in a while, I guess they just put it together. Yeah. I hate when people try to like condense something and make it into this little box. And I think that's what they tried to do with you guys Thursday and everybody else.
Yeah. 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 It was a very, difficult thing to try and navigate through for us, but I feel like we almost had like a reactionary kind of motivation beyond that record. It was like, no, we are different, we like all these other styles of music. And then when we ended up making Visu, which was,
I was going to say, that was quite a departure. I wondered if that was a reactionary thing playing up against all that stuff we just spoke about.
Well, it was, and it was also us kind of doing what we wanted, and it was kind of against the grain, so it felt like punk.
I will say that's probably the most punk rock album you guys have put out, other than maybe the Element EPs. That was pretty punk rock, too.
Yeah, yeah. There, I will say the only record that I feel like that we've done where we've been like worried about what people will think was Artists in the Ambulance.
Really?
And I feel and I feel like because of that, we didn't add some of the influences that we would have, that ended up being on Visu, like using like keyboards or more like lush kind of things.
There was definitely more space on Visu. I think Artist in the Ambulance was very angular. It was very like stop on a dime, almost like robotic in the drums and everything. And Visu felt much looser, but I love the progression you guys made.
Yeah, totally. Thank you. Not totally.
Totally, man.
But I think, when we were writing that record, it was like, it's like, let's make sure that we're not like
catering to anybody.
We're not losing any of the, like, the metal stuff that we had done, or like we like, you know, more like mathy time signatures. Let's make sure there's like, make sure we have some mathy. There's a lot of mathy stuff on that record. And I wouldn't say that we were like catering to our older audience. We were just making sure that people wouldn't like freak out that it was like, oh my gosh, they're changing everything all of a sudden.
They signed to a major and now, you know, who's this new band?
Yeah, totally.
So so you're basically telling me that the Artist in the Ambulance could have been a completely different record, maybe.
If we had more time, I think it would have been. I mean, the ideas would have been the same. I feel like the ideas that came out would have...
Maybe different instrumentation or some like, you know...
Yeah.
Okay. I would love to hear that other version of Artist in the Ambulance. I think it'd be pretty good.
I'd love to hear a remix, honestly. Like we mixed that record. We had some really expensive mixing done on it, and he took out a lot of the stuff that we really liked about it. But I don't know if we'll ever have that because we don't own the master, so.
So with Visu being, you know, a departure from what you guys were doing, well, I kind of looked at that as a sign of things to come with each sequential release, because after that, it kind of just went crazy. I mean, like the EPs, the Element EPs, I mean, it was Total Concept Records. It just, I love the whole idea behind that. What was the workload like that went into doing a project like that?
It wasn't much different than how we do things like to this day. It's just, we all write, you know, everybody writes on guitar, everybody writes a bass part, everybody like programs or writes a drum part. I think the difference with that record wasn't like, how can we bring these parts together? It's like, how can we push it more in the direction that it feels like it's going? So if it was on acoustic guitar, it's not like, oh, let's put that on electric and, you know, maybe add distortion, you know, like turn it into more of like a cohesive kind of thing. It was like, well, how can we like push them more in the direction that they're going? Or
That's a really cool concept, because I've always written songs on acoustics and then you take them to the band. But if you write a song on an acoustic guitar and it has that vibe and it's a good song, like try to explore what it could be like on the original instrument you wrote it on. I love that concept.
Totally. Yeah, it was really cool. And I think it was like a good exercise for the band. Because there was a lot of limiting aspects of trying to make things more cohesive or make them sound more like quote unquote finger quotes thrice. Was great for us, because now like I feel like we're in a spot where the band sound is, it's almost like you expect it to be different.
I mean, that's what I love about you guys, because every time I buy a new record, I feel like, you know, what thrice am I going to get? That's a positive thing, because I love surprises, and I hope that, you know, other people out there feel the same way. But even, like, I was going to ask you about Beggars, because I was on Warped Tour, main stage with you guys in 2009 when Beggars came out. And I just remember when I got that record, I mean, I thought you guys had already changed so much, but that was a complete change as well. Like, just the more rock kind of stripped down sound. Was that something that you guys, like, consciously talked about, or was that just how things came out?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we were like, we had been touring, doing a lot of stuff with, you know, you have a bunch of gear on stage and synths and, you know, just like all sorts of stuff. And when we were writing for that record, we were kind of in a spot where we were like, I just want to sound like four people in a room, like playing their instrument, you know?
Yeah.
And also we recorded that ourselves, like we did, the Alchemy Index stuff too.
Did you do that stuff at Tappy's studio?
Yeah. Yeah. And also I think at the time when we were writing it, or right before we were writing it, the Radiohead album In Rainbows had come out. And we really liked the production on that, like how dry and tight everything sounded. We were like, oh dang, like we can definitely do that at our little studio, little garage studio that we have. So, I feel like that was really influential on that record as well.
So you guys did Major Minor after that, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was a great record as well, but I'd like to talk a little bit about the hiatus that came after that. What, I mean, I'm sure this has probably been talked about on other interviews and whatnot, but what kind of happened there? I know some of the guys had some kids and Dustin was doing some solo stuff. Like, what kind of caused the hiatus, if you don't mind speaking about it?
I don't mind at all. It was a combination of a lot of things. We were touring a lot, and which is tiring. Some of the guys had kids, which is, you know, that makes touring difficult.
That's one reason why I'm not on the road anymore, because I have two little kids.
Yeah. I mean, it's rough.
I respect anybody that can make it work, man. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. We're trying our best now to do it in a way where it's sustainable. That's like the most important thing about our scheduling now. But also at the time, it was like a really dark time for us. All of us, I think within a three-year period, maybe even 2 years, lost a parent to cancer.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a point in time where, like, Dustin's dad, Tepe's mom, and Riley and my dad all were living with cancer all at the same time.
And that's got to be hard being away from family, too, when that's going on. You guys are out on the road. That's got to be really hard.
Yeah. It was just taxing, and mentally it was like, what is right? What is real? What is good? What makes me happy? Like, it was a really difficult time. I think in a lot of that, you can hear in Major Minor too. I think, and then Dustin had an opportunity to work elsewhere and focus on other things and be with his family more. And he ended up writing us a letter that was like, hey guys, like, I'm not saying we're done for good, but I need to do this. And that was really hard. I think for him to even say that to us, but also everybody was just kind of like, this is a dream job and we're stopping. Like, what's going on here?
Did you think that you guys would come back, or in your mind, were you like, okay, it's over?
I, I tend to be pretty pessimistic. I was like, this is probably over. I mean, I didn't feel like we were done writing music together. Yeah. Like, I felt like even to this day, like, as soon as we finish a record, we're like, but what if we do this? And I want to do this. Or what about this part that didn't make it on the record or whatever? I mean, that was still there after Major Minor, and it was difficult. And also I had this mindset where I was throughout the whole band, I was like, this could end at any moment. This could end at any moment. Somebody could get injured or something could happen. I don't know. People could stop liking the band or whatever. So I was like always kind of like preparing mentally to have it not, the band not exist anymore, but I wasn't prepared. So it was a rough transition, because we went from a full-time band to trying to find other work. It's scary. And I see it happen all over the place with bands, or, you know, I'm big into skateboarding and surfing, and see people switch careers and they're like, whoa, what do I do?
Yeah. Was there ever like an idea of maybe continuing on with a new singer guitarist, or was that kind of out of the question?
No, we can't.
It wouldn't be Thrice anymore.
Yeah. The way that the band functions and how much everybody's writing is involved, it would just be weird. It wouldn't be the same band. I mean, I feel like if I happened to get in an accident or something, I'd be stoked if the guys continued making music. But, like if somebody's like, I don't want to do this anymore, I don't think there's any way that the band would be able to continue.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Chris. Going to take a brief break from the conversation with Eddie to let you hear from one of our brand new sponsors. Don't worry, we'll get right back to Eddie in 1 minute.
Let me ask you a question. Do you like the band Thrice? Of course you do. They're the best. And the reason they're the best is because of their awesome music. Now, I've got a podcast called Zealous Musician, taking a closer look at the music we love. In season one, we'll dive into music from post-hardcore and emo bands like Thrice, Under Oath, A Day to Remember, Taking Back Sunday, Brand New, and Copeland. The focus is on light music theory, even playing some ourselves, and rediscovering why we loved these bands so much in the first place. So, if you're passionate about the music from these bands, check out my podcast, Zealous Musician. I did my very first episode on the band Thrice, focusing on their rad guitar licks, their amazing bass guitar parts. Eddie, you're the man! Their amazing chord progressions, meaningful lyrics, and focusing on the dynamics of this very talented rock band. I'm Marco Randazzo. This is Zealous Musician.
So you spoke about, you know, the band went on hiatus and you had to look for other work. I know that you did some touring and whatnot with Knapsack, but what I wanted to ask you about, I didn't know this, but I was checking out doing some research. Did you really join Angels and Airwaves?
Not really.
Not really. Cause you're in a video though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll try and make this short, so it's really hard to not run on about like the.
Dude, you can run on about it if you want. I'm very interested.
Okay, because, you can edit it down.
Yeah, I'll edit it down. I've met Tom, and I kind of want to know your thoughts on how all that went about and what he's got going on now. Because I thought maybe it was like one of those fake news stories, but you actually did it.
No, yeah. So when we went into hiatus. I had already been doing some like woodworking stuff on the side, and I tried to kind of start my own business, and was also working with some other people like cabinet makers or installation people that build like the interior of new, you know, like coffee shops and stuff like that. I started doing that and wasn't really making any money. And then I started tour managing. There's this pop singer named Dev, did some did some tour managing for a bit. And then through that, I got a job. I got a job working for a management company that manages social distortion. That's called Relentless Artist Management. So I was doing like the day-to-day kind of stuff, which was, dude, that's hard work. It's like 24/7 getting calls whenever, making sure that you're super on top of emails, which is my least favorite thing in the world. And then when I was doing that, I got a call from a guy who used to work with us, who works with Tom. And he was like, "Hey, Tom is looking for a bass player for Angels and Airwaves. Would you be willing to do that?" And I was like, "Oh, like, yes, I think." I was also trying. Well, the reason why I say I think is because I was working on some music with my brother that would later become this band that we're doing called Less Art.
Yeah, I love the Less Art record, man. It's really good.
Oh, thank you. I didn't want to like bail on my brother.
Yeah.
But it was like too good of an opportunity, like, you know, to continue to play music, which is my passion. I didn't really think that I would ever have any writing credit possibilities with Angels and Airwaves.
You thought it was just going to be kind of like a hired gun type deal?
Yeah. It totally was. That would have been a cool opportunity, meet some new people, continue to play music and travel. And that was one of the things that I missed the most about stopping with the Thrice stuff is meeting new people, meeting friends, like learning about music by doing it, you know? So I was like, yeah. And I called my brother and I was like, is it cool if I do this? He's like, of course, you know? Like, okay. So, I ended up talking with them and kind of like discussing like how it would go about. And he's like, well, I need you to quit your job because we have a tour coming up in October or whatever. I was like, okay. So I was like, yes, I don't have to like stress out about emails anymore. but I ended up like putting in 2 months instead of 2 weeks at that job and ended up quitting. But then, as that transition happened, Dave, the guitar player, was like, "Hey man, like things are a little bit up in the air right now. I think you should know, just so you know." And then I ended up getting a call from Tom that was like, "Hey, so that tour's not happening. And, maybe we'll have something next summer." Mind you, this was during the summer before. And I was like, oh my gosh.
And you just quit your job, right?
Yeah. I have no job and I have, but then I ended up shooting a music video with them for a song that they had, Alon and Tom had written, and which was cool, you know? And then it just kind of stopped.
Well, I mean, he's out there hunting aliens, so.
yeah. Hey, if he finds them, I'll be stoked.
Yeah, but, I'll tell you
maybe
what.
Maybe he has, I don't know.
You know him a little better than I do, so if he finds aliens and you find out, hit me up and let me know, because yes, I will know what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay, so that just kind of.
Maybe I know them.
Oh, maybe you know. Okay.
Oh, no.
Well, then after we get done recording for the podcast, if you know anything special, I won't put it up online, but you got to let me know, Eddie.
Yeah.
So after that kind of ended, I mean, is there anything else with that story? I don't want to edit. I actually love all this stuff.
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, it was for what it's worth, it was a cool experience and it kind of ended up pushing me in a different way. Like I ended up quitting that management job, basically lost this job that I was going to have. I didn't lose it. Like, I don't know, maybe they'll play some shows and I'll play with them. I don't know. Who knows? Like I haven't talked to Tom in over a year, so I don't know. I don't know what he's up to exactly, but, I think he's recording from what I've seen.
I've seen on his Instagram. It looks like he's doing some recording. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't know. No, there's no bad blood. It's just,
I mean, sometimes when an opportunity like that happens, you just have to say, screw it and just go for it, man.
Oh, totally. And I did, and it ended up putting me in a better place. Like, I ended up helping some friends of mine start a coffee shop in Echo Park in LA, and then ended up working at that coffee shop for a bit. And I started playing with a band with one of my coworkers, just like a band from LA. And just kind of just started on this other path. And then I ended up meeting my now fiance working at that coffee shop. So it's like, okay, like I had
none of that would have happened if you wouldn't have done. That's great.
Totally.
Man. Yeah.
Totally. It's like one seeming disaster into another disaster into another thing that I don't know, ended up turning into this. I remember getting a text from Dustin. I think Dustin and Tepe met up because they were both living in, they were living like near Seattle. And they went to a show. And they were like, Dustin was like, I think I want to do this again. I'm done with the work that I'm doing here. The path that he had taken is the one that he wanted to do. And he wanted to start doing Thrice stuff again. But this was like via text or an email or something while I was working at that coffee shop. I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go again. You know, I was like, absolutely, you know, so.
Was there any like worries about that because of how it ended with the hiatus started back in 2012, or were you just like, man, I'm ready to do this. Let's go.
I was totally ready to do it. I think in the writing of, to be everywhere is to be nowhere. I think I was maybe a little bit less apt to like, really like challenge. I just wanted to like make everything work, you know. We don't really like argue ever about writing music. We don't actually. But I guess I was just like a little bit more passive on that record, more like, okay, yeah, that's cool.
I feel like you guys are like another thing I like about your band. I mean, I've watched a lot of the in the studio videos and whatnot. It seems like you guys are you're so like into it that you're kind of perfectionist almost to a fault. Like you guys want it to be so great that you're worried about like parts that I think are amazing. You're like, maybe we should change that. So you said you kind of pulled back that a little bit just to make it a little bit more copacetic.
Yeah. That might come across as a little bit weird, but like, it's more personal than it is like a band relationship thing. Like I had a thing with that record where I was like, wait, what is my opinion that is helpful to the band versus like something that might be like me pushing like my ego or my identity? Like, I don't mean ego in I'm not egotistical, but I like, it's like everybody experiences music differently. And everybody in our band specifically, like they kind of want different things out of the band. And that's like, some of that is truly like the magic of the band, but also it's the part that makes it difficult too. Like, oh, I'm really into Fugazi and like old DC music and San Diego kind of like music from like the 90s like stuff. I'm always like kind of like pushing things to be a little bit like messier and and Riley likes like a lot of heavier music and I mean, we all have our like identities of like what we want, and I feel like there's a point when you need to relent. Like, you don't want to be like, this is what this band needs to be, you know?
Yeah.
And, you can find, like, in writing music, you can find those pockets of that sound that you like, even in a song that doesn't really represent you as an individual.
Okay.
And not every song has to represent you as an individual. So I had some songs like that on that record, I guess. I guess on every record, but
yeah, I would think with you guys, the way that you are, and everybody does have the input, and it's kind of like a democracy type deal, there's got to be some parts or some songs on each record that maybe you're not feeling that much, right?
Oh, totally.
Do you have a song on To Be Everywhere Is To Be Nowhere that you really, really liked, like one that really set with you well?
I really like that song, The Window.
Okay.
But then when we recorded it, a lot of what I liked about it, we ended up kind of smoothing it out. So like there's a bass line in it that actually Tepe wrote. It's really cool, but I feel like we kind of simplified it in a way, that to make it like I guess it was kind of more a production thing. The producer that we were working with was like, there's too many notes, it's kind of fighting the vocal, and
too,
like,
busy.
Yeah, but like if you listen to like this Fugazi record, there's all this stuff going on. He's like, no, you're not Fugazi. And I was like, but I want to be like, let me do that. I guess those are the things that I was like, okay, this is me. This is what I want with the band. I'm one, you know, I'll let this slide. But,
okay.
But that, I feel like that song had a lot of, awesome things in it, that I was happy with.
Were you aware that the band Seether covered Black Honey on Sirius XM on Octane?
We found out about it.
They did a pretty good job. I mean, it was pretty awesome. Yeah. I just wondered what you guys thought about that.
We were like, what the heck? This is crazy. Like, I mean, it's cool. It's kind of like a bold move too. I thought it was awesome. I mean, the only thing that I can kind of relate to it is, you know, Jimi Hendrix covering the Beatles or something. You're like, yeah. I mean, not that we're at, I'm comparing the level, but I'm just saying,
I get what you're saying.
It was like a new single, and then they're covering our new single. I was like, whoa, that's pretty rad.
Have you had any correspondence with those guys at all?
No, not at all. At least as far as I know. And I think we played some festivals with them. We might have both played Black Honey at the same festival. Who knows? But yeah, no, that was awesome. I also feel like Black Honey was a song that I kind of connected with on that record too, though, because that was like the first song that we actually got together and kind of jammed out. And it, for a song that ended up going on to radio, it definitely didn't feel as radio friendly as maybe some of the other songs on the record.
Yeah, I get that.
And I like the idea of pushing songs that maybe are a little bit more challenging to radio, because, you know, I don't know, radio can oversimplify sometimes, that I think is not good for the health of the listener and the art of the music, you know?
Yeah. So you guys, this far along in your career, I mean, To Be Everywhere Is To Be Nowhere, I think, debuted on Billboard at number 8 its first week. And then with Palms, your new record that just came out on Epitaph, it debuted at 7. So, I mean, did you think this far down, like, the road that you guys were going to be releasing albums that were the top 10 on Billboard?
Not even.
Does that stuff matter to you guys at all? Or is it kind of cool? Or is it just you totally don't even worry about it?
I don't really worry about it. It's the result of us doing something that we wanted to do that has a completely different motivation. So it's like, whoa, that's cool. Like, it's not like, yes, we did it, because
yeah,
we weren't doing that, you know?
It wasn't the, like, goal per se, but you guys work so hard and your integrity is still there on every record, and it just kind of came to you. I love that.
Yeah. And I mean, for us, like, making music, it's just trying to somehow meld our brains and, you know, be excited and inspired by music, and we're sharing it with each other. And I don't know. I'm happy that there's no shortage of ideas. We had far too many ideas to incorporate all together into a record for this record. It was really hard to sift through it all, honestly. And that's such a rad thing to have, you know. I guess it's 20 years in now.
Yeah. How's it been being on Epitaph?
Awesome. I mean, Vagrant was awesome as well, but I guess I don't want to compare the labels, but like it's just, it feels really good. It feels like they have common goals with us. They're excited about what we can think up, what we can possibly do, and they're all about supporting that. So that feels really good.
Did they have anything to do with some of like the unique kind of marketing ideas, like the handwritten hashtag palms thing on Instagram, like, or was that all you guys?
I don't know. I think it was actually maybe Riley's idea with the hashtag. Riley and Dustin kind of combo. I mean, Dustin ended up waking up from like a dream, the whole like palms concept. Sounds kind of corny, but he was like sleeping and he woke up and he was like, oh, like I can see almost like the Thrice symbol in the lines of my hand on my palm.
Wow. And,
yeah.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. But then he also liked what like the open hand kind of represented, like, can be like peace or acceptance or like love or praise or, you know, like all these pretty positive things. As long as the fingers aren't together, then you get a little the dangerous territory that we were a bit concerned about, with all that's going on in the world right now. But, just the idea of this, like, open hand. It's a really cool concept. And then bringing people together and then doing the hashtag palms thing, I thought was.
I will say that when you search hashtag palms, it's about 90% pictures of palm trees though.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't think about that, but that's all right. Palm trees are pretty cool too.
Yeah, palm trees are great. You guys are from California. I'm sure you've got them out there, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I tell you what, I do have some listener questions because your band is probably the most requested band from all my listeners. So I've got three listener questions I'd like to ask you.
Thank you, listeners. That's awesome.
Yeah, they're good listeners, man. They've got good taste in music. Okay, so Marco from Colorado, he writes in and wants to know, how do you approach writing melodic bass parts without stepping on the guitars and vocals? I think we kind of touched on this on that busy stuff we were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard question because it really depends on the song. Sometimes the melodic bass part is the basis of where the song starts, you know? So that makes it a bit easier, but
I have noticed in some songs that you guys have done, I'm missing out on the title in my head, but I noticed that like the bass line will take the melody, and then maybe on the chorus, like Tepi will come in and like match that melody on lead guitar. Like you guys kind of like shovel it around a lot. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Stare at the Sun. Definitely, we were like, I wrote the noodly kind of bass part, but I think I suggested it maybe switching over to guitar, and then Brian McTernan, the producer at the time, was like, let's just flip-flop it. You guys can flip-flop it. And then I think we've done that on a couple things since. But yeah, I feel like writing melodic bass parts, a lot of it comes about because even when we're jamming on parts, I hum a lot.
Yeah.
Along with like just counter melodies. I really like weavy kind of melodies that dip in from harmonizing to, you know, landing on the root notes and kind of just bouncing around. I'm not schooled in music, but I'm a fan of a lot of cool melodic, what I think is cool melody play kind of bands. There's a band called No Knife that's been a huge influence on us for a long time that had done a lot of that. It was actually one of the bands that Dustin and I really connected on when the band first started. So if you haven't checked out No Knife, you definitely should.
I have, but I don't know if my listeners have, so check out No Knife.
Yeah. Yeah. They're still a huge influence on us. So
I just always like when I listen to a Thrice record, you know, the bass playing is going to be more interesting than maybe your average record, because it's not just root notes. Like you're finding things that work. When he asked about stepping on guitars and vocals, I feel like you're not stepping on those things because you're going somewhere else dynamically, completely different.
Thank you. That's awesome.
I am a music trained guy. I'm a guitar instructor and I'm a music theory geek. So when I see what you're doing, it kind of blows me away that you're not trained.
Yeah. I don't know where it comes from sometimes. A lot of it comes from influence. Like I really like a band that does this, and I don't think I necessarily will be like, well, I'm going to do this style part over this thing. Just melodies pop in my head and I follow them. A lot of times it's me like just landing on a note and then I pick the next note from there, and it kind of just develops in this way where you're just kind of doing a stream of conscious melodic thing and you just go. I love that stuff. But
I think you've answered his question pretty well.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Okay. So, my second question, Rob from Nevada, he wants to know, how do you handle so many different tunings while playing live?
Oof. It is a struggle.
I remember I saw you guys like in 2004, maybe in Cincinnati, and I was talking to Dustin and he had, maybe it was him and Tubby both, but he had this thing, like this MIDI thing on his guitar that actually changed tunings for him digitally.
Oh yeah. He did that for a bit, but he's not doing that anymore.
Well, that night I asked him before you guys went up, I'm like, hey, can you play this song? I can't even remember what it was. He's like, man, we cannot deviate from the set list.
Yeah. I mean, it's, we have so many songs now too, but tunings can be really frustrating because it can really interrupt the flow of a set.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes like when you're trying to create a set list, like two songs back to back would work really well into each other, or like a combination of songs would work really well together. But then there's the issue. It's like, well, you know, we have to switch a guitar for each song. That just is going to feel gross. So we don't do it. And it sucks, but I don't think we'd ever want to like limit how we're working with tunings to make things easier. I don't think the easy route is not as important as like making the songs right, you know?
Yeah.
So it can be difficult though. Like even on this tour, we've been like still kind of swapping songs around in the set. And this is maybe the 9th or 10th show on this tour. Just trying to make stuff flow right and not be awkward with somebody standing there tuning or switching a guitar in a spot where songs could just be like bam, bam, you know, right into each other.
Are you guys playing TNC tonight?
No. I think we did that on the farewell tour, but
okay. I'm just kidding around, man. I remember like seeing some interview somewhere and they're like, oh, we're not playing that song.
Yeah. Okay. We are playing some old stuff though.
What about Deadbolt, man? I know Deadbolt's a big fan favorite.
Yeah. We still do that. I mean, it's probably a song that we've played more than any song ever.
Hey man, I was in the Ataris. You want to ask me how many times I played Boys of Summer? It'll freak you out. Okay, so this is my last fan, or not fan. Well, I guess they are a fan, but my last listener question. Mike from Indiana wants to know, how did you go about digitally dropping in the bass clarinet at the end of Blood on Blood on the new record?
Oh, we recorded that all the guitars and bass, keyboards, overdubs, all that stuff ourselves. Like in a friend's studio, Tepe was engineering it. I pretty much just brought like every instrument we have into this space. And I don't think it was an original idea for the song. Like we hadn't planned on it, but I was kind of tooting around on my bass clarinet and I was like, oh, it'd be awesome to just layer these long notes to get this like breathy, awesome. That bass clarinet sounds so awesome.
Yeah.
I could play with it into this, like it drops out into a low note, but I couldn't hit the low note because it's, you know, the range of the bass clarinet stops a half step from that. Like, damn it. But I could play the higher note. But when you end with the higher note, it felt really crummy.
It changes the whole dynamics when you do that.
Oh my gosh. And I was like, well, I wonder if we could just drop it like digitally. You can do it in Pro Tools. I'll just play the half step and just hold it sounding horrible through this part. And then we can go in post and drop it down a half step and ended up not sounding bad, which technology is crazy now. Cause I feel like a couple of years ago, it would have sounded all weird and choppy or have some sort of an auto-tuned kind of sound to it. But it ended up sounding super awesome. But I love that I got to throw that in there. I feel like anytime you can do some sort of like ear candy thing for maybe the more music nerdy type people or people that play music, you can pick those things out and be like, whoa, what the heck?
I mean, there's a lot of ear candy on the new record. I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah. We worked really hard on it. I feel like this record definitely has like a lot of our individual identities in a way that you don't get sometimes when you're working with a producer, because it's hard to suggest things when people are just trying to keep things moving or, you know, a lot of the experimentation that that can happen in a studio is harder to do when you have to like sell it.
Yeah.
You know? So it was fun. And Tepe and I spent a lot of time in the studio, just the two of us, and trying to figure out a way to represent what was done in the demo and not lose a lot of the magic of that. Or I ended up actually, like, all the feedback that you hear on the record is me playing guitar, feedbacking in this room, just doing like overdub feedback parts.
That's awesome, man.
Just super, super fun. And totally like the kind of identity that I want to add to the band, to like kind of like give this like visceral, like, oh, like this part's about to happen. You can feel it about to happen. So it's not like a dead silent to like pop into a big part. You want to hear it kind of like ramp up and be noisy and nasty and stuff.
That's awesome, man. I just got to tell you, I love the new record. I've loved everything you guys have done, but the new record, definitely this far into your career to put out something as great as Palms. I commend you, man. It's a really, really good record.
Thank you so much. I, I'm happy with it, but I also can't wait to do the next thing.
I can't wait for you guys to do the next thing either. So I'm not going to take up much more of your time. I do have kind of a personal question. I've, you know, as you have been on the road quite a bit over my life, I've been to a lot of different countries. I'm an avid traveler, you know, in bands and then also just going on vacation myself. So where is somewhere overseas that you've been that you really, really liked and you can't wait to go back to? I know you guys just did South America, which I was interested to hear about that because love South America, man.
South America was really cool. The people there were so, so awesome. I have a little bit of Spanish, so Argentina and Chile were all right, but my Portuguese is real bad. So I'd love to, I can't wait to go there again. We had a really, really awesome time there.
When I went to Ecuador, man, like I've been almost every country in South America. There's a couple weird ones. If you're listening, but places that are harder to get to. But, when I was in Ecuador, I did not find one person that spoke English. Any other place I was at, I always found people, but I was in like Quito and then I went out into the countryside and Otavalo and all these places. And I think at the end of the trip, I found this Canadian guy, but man, it was a struggle because my Spanish is not great.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, we're so fortunate as English speakers because people everywhere, except for maybe where you were in Ecuador.
Maybe it was just a bad day to be there. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But, for the most part, we're so lucky. You can travel and people learn English because it's important for them to learn English. That's what they learn in school. And, I feel so lucky to be able to go to, Brazil or, I don't know, Sweden or Japan or wherever, and you can get around speaking English. You got to realize how lucky we are to be able to do that.
I had a conversation with this guy that I met in Prague when I was over in the Czech Republic, and he knew some English, and I was speaking to him. I said, man, it's easy for me because a lot of people speak English. I said, how is it for you? He's like, man, when I went to the States, it was hard.
Oh. Yeah, I can imagine.
Because you can get by pretty easily in the Czech Republic with your English, but he can't get by with Czech over here. It's a weird thing.
Not at all. Yeah, we actually were just in Europe, and I skateboard a lot, so I brought a skateboard for the first time because it's kind of awkward bringing it on the plane. It's like all this extra stuff, but I ended up going to a lot of skate parks. Just kind of skating around and meeting other skateboarders. And that was a whole other community that I don't normally get to meet. And, I just met this kid in France who was at a skate park and we just started talking about life and the world or whatever. And he spoke great English and I was just damn, this is so cool. This is really, really cool experience being able to skate around too. I need to do that more often.
Yeah, definitely. Just don't break your arms like James Hetfield always used to do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I really want to go back to Japan, though. We went there early on, 2003, and that was probably one of my favorite traveling experiences. And we haven't been back since, and that's a huge bummer. But it's, hard to schedule that stuff and make stuff work where you're not losing a bunch of money and whatnot.
Yeah, that's what people don't really understand. Hey, come to my country. It's man, we got to make this work with everything else. Yeah.
You got flights, you got gear rental or shipping gear costs. It gets crazy.
So I tell you what, man, I really appreciate you being on the show today. I felt like I've gotten to know you pretty well and I've learned some stuff about Thrice that I didn't know. Where are you guys going to be the next couple of days? How long does the tour last? Do you have anything else in the works coming up?
Like I was saying before, where we're trying to do this touring thing where it's a little bit more sustainable. We're actually doing a US tour in two segments. So we're on the first half of it right now. Almost halfway through this first half, or I guess halfway through this first half. We're in South Carolina, then we got North Carolina, Maryland, up to New York. basically going up the East Coast now. And that ends in Nashville on October 15th or the 14th. I think we fly back on the 15th. Then we have 2 weeks off. And then we come back and we start touring up the Northwest and a little bit more of the U.S. And then, yeah, I think then we're off for the winter.
If you get close to Indiana at all, like Chicago, Cincinnati, wherever, I'm going to try to make it out, man. I haven't seen you guys play since like 09.
Yeah, yeah, please come. Hit me up.
Cool. Well, any plans for anything else? I mean, I know you guys said as soon as you get a record out, you start writing. Has that started, or are you guys kind of putting that off for a bit?
I haven't really been working on full songs, but I mean, I definitely have some new little audio clips that I've saved on my phone or whatever recording device now. I'm sure we'll be working on a new record probably in 2020. Wow. 2019. Maybe release 2020. That's so crazy.
That's crazy, right?
Oh, it's so crazy. And then I'll probably be doing new stuff with Les Hard. And,
I didn't get to talk to you a lot about that. So maybe next time, maybe I'll have you back and we can talk about Les Hard.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Cool. Well, hey, man, I appreciate it so much. I hope you guys have a killer show tonight. Tell the guys I said what's up, and I'll talk to you soon, Eddie. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks to all the listeners, too. Yeah.
Cool. Talk to you later, man. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
And there it was, my conversation with Eddie Breckenridge from the band Thrice. Make sure that you guys go out and pick up their new record, Palms, out on Epitaph Records, or, you know, stream it or download it or whatever. You have to check it out. It's a great record. So, next week we're going to keep rolling. I have Randy Bradbury from Pennywise. Pennywise has been one of my favorite bands since I was like a freshman in high school. So me and Randy talk about a lot of really cool stuff, and I can't wait for you guys to check out that episode. That is next week, followed the week after by my buddy Pete Parada from The Offspring. Pete also played in Face to Face, Saves the Day. He even played in Alkaline Trio for a while. So the next 2 weeks are going to be really, really good. So make sure that you subscribe, rate and review in the iTunes store. Follow us on social media, TOTOT Podcast. Get in touch, become a sponsor, TOTOTPodcast@gmail.com. If you're in the local area and you need some guitar strings or whatever, go to Muncie Music Center, 600 South Mulberry Street, Muncie, Indiana. You can check them out online, muncymusic.com. That's it, man. I'm going to get out of here. Before I go, I'm going to play a couple Thrice songs. First, I'm going to play my favorite song on their new album, Palms. It's entitled Just Breathe. And after that, I'm going to play one of my all-time favorite Thrice songs. It's a song called Fire Breather, which was a part of the Elements EPs, those four EPs they put out, the concept EPs. So thank you guys so much for listening. I love you like crazy, and I hope that you come back week after week. Let your friends know, tell everybody you know, share us on social media, and let's just keep growing this thing. I love doing it, and I'm going to continue to do it as long as you guys continue to listen. So I hope everybody has a good week. I will be back next Wednesday with episode 28 with Randy Bradbury from the almighty Pennywise. So thank you guys so much. I'll see you then. This is Chris signing off.
Soda. What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.